This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the Fun Belt Podcast, part of the Believe Network.
Folks, to Dusty Thibodeau of Warhawk Report, Jeremy Harper of Howlraiser, and Shane Metlin of the Daily News Record.
I think it's potentially a very good week for the Sun Belt.
But I'm just kind of going off on a random rant. It's just frustrating. It's another episode of Fun Belt Podcast. We have championships in our midst. Shane Metlin on the Bet Online phone line as he is on his way back from Pensacola. Shane, did you get a clipping of the net as the men hoisted the hardware to claim the Sun Belt Conference title?
No, I don't think I was on the list for that. I got to stand there while they clipped some net down, but nobody offered to let me on the ladder.
Sometimes you just got to take the opportunity when it arises there, Shane. You don't ask, you just ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, I was glad just to not get kicked off the court as I tried to talk to people.
So you were down there in Pensacola there, Shane. What was your impressions? It was really a mixed review of kind of the venue, kind of the whole situation, the broadcast issues. It seemed like it was a little bit of everything this year.
Yeah, I thought the event itself went off kind of without a hitch. I think it's a good venue for it. It's a good location for it. Thought the crowds were maybe even better than last year, at least in some rounds. But did definitely notice a lot of fans complaining about the broadcast issues with the ESPN Plus stream. Talked to some people about that. And I think it's something they'll probably address and maybe handle the broadcast a little bit different next year.
BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head over to BetOnline today to become part of the team and remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
So we have representation for the men's championship team there with JMU. We also got the women's champ, beat writer in the house, Luke Creasy, joins us as his women's basketball team from the Thundering Herd of Marshall. They capped off a great season there, Luke. Tell us, how'd you see things shaking out there on the women's side of the bracket in Pensacola?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a roller coaster for the women, I think, because if you look at the three games, none of them were really all that similar. Of course, I had the blowout against App State, scored 116 points, and then had to come from behind and beat Old Dominion, trailed by double digits in that game before they turned it up in the second half. And then just a really statistically odd championship game. And I think Shane will agree with that because he was there watching it too. Forced 39 turnovers, took 99 shots. And just some weird, really weird statistics out of that one. But they come out with the win in overtime after, letting a 10-point lead go in the fourth quarter. But that was a heck of a championship game. And I think that's just about everything you want in a title game is what we saw between Marshall and JMU. But that's 10 straight wins for the Herd. Heading into the NCAA tournament now, and certainly have turned things around under first year coach Kim Caldwell.
I was gonna say Luke nailed it with the weird statistical stuff. Both coaches come in and look at the box scores and like just can't believe what they're reading. Turnovers and the amount of missed shots. And each team, I think, felt like, oh, if we just did our thing a little bit better, we could have pulled away. And it made it a really good game, even if it wasn't always the prettiest game. Both teams just went back and forth, and it was entertaining.
Luke, 26-6 for Marshall's women's team. What was it? Whatever and one in conference action. Was that really a surprise to you like it was everyone else on the outside looking in? And at what point did you kind of realize, hey, this might actually be a pretty legit, pretty special team?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise because there were a lot of unknowns when Caldwell came in as the coach because the style was so different. She brought in a couple players to the transfer portal, but had a lot of the returning people from Tony Kemper's squad last year that didn't make it past the quarterfinals. So there was a lot of learning to do, I think, in that system. It's a unique style. If you're familiar with hockey and the term line changes, that's what you see a lot of. She's going to make about 100 subs a game. People are still going to average between 20 and 25 minutes. But they're always going to have fresh legs. And I think that style takes some getting used to. You've got to have a conditioning aspect to get there. And I think the slower start to the season maybe has a lot to do with that. But they finished conference play 6-5, non-conference play 6-5, and then are 20-1 in league games this year when you count the tournament wins. We're 17-1 in the regular season, so it's been a whole turnaround. And it's been fun to watch. It's a fun style, but I don't think anybody quite saw this coming. And I think when you look at Caldwell's career, she's had success where she's been. And so the fact that she was successful wasn't necessarily a surprise. It's just how much success she had right off the bat.
Obviously, the Herd get the automatic qualifying bid there with the win. Looking like a lot of projections of a 14 seed going up against Notre Dame in South Bend. Does that game matter? And I know, yeah, it does, because we want to win another NCAA tournament game. But does it really matter, or does this season and what they've already done and accomplished kind of make this season already a win?
I think it really depends on whose perspective you're looking at it from, because – obviously, from the fan expectation, they're happy to be there. I think that the coaches and the players are going into any game they play expecting to win and thinking they can, and there's no reason not to, because they are a vastly different team than they were just a couple months ago. I remember it might have been the first couple weeks of the season. I think Marshall was maybe a game below 500. Caldwell said, well, most of my losses have come in November and March. I don't lose very often in between. And that's kind of come to come to fruition here this year. But I think it's a really intriguing matchup. You know, you get a chance to show yourself against one of the better teams in the country, see how that style matches up. And then also in some of those projections I saw that West Virginia is predicted to be in the same bracket. And Marshall just cannot get away from that. When the men made the NCAA tournament after winning Conference USA in 2018, they got put in the same bracket as WVU men's basketball, and could be looking at the same beginning this year if some of those projections are accurate. But I think that they're playing with house money. You know, you're going to get one of those lower seeds. That's just kind of the nature of where the net rankings lie and how things set up for mid-majors nowadays. So you're going to get a low seed. You're going to be an underdog. But I think that, you know, that it'll be exciting. And I think they're just going to go in and kind of play free. If you ask Coach, she likes to play from behind anyway because they can't play with the lead very well most of the time. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Luke, are you surprised that they're not projected to get a little bit better seed than what we're seeing? Because I think JMU was a 12 going into the NCAA tournament last year, and I think Marshall probably has a little bit better resume. I'm surprised it's not more like in the 12, maybe even 11 range.
Yeah, I was expecting maybe 12. Was maybe a little surprised to see him down at 14, but you know, and while a 12 would still be a low seed, Shane, you and I talked about the difference in, you know, being a 12 or a 13 or 14, you know, in the way that sets up as far as, you know, playing a true road game or, you know, just playing a neutral side game on somebody else's floor. But, you know, I think some of those early season losses hurt him. Lost to Morehead State, lost to Northern Kentucky. Those aren't wins that are going to help out that net ranking at all. And I think, you know, JMU's coach Sean O'Regan hit on that in the postgame press conference yesterday. He said, you've almost got to play perfect in the non-conference and then, you know, keep that up in the yeah. conference play. And so I think some of those early season losses kind of stick out like a sore thumb on their resume. But, you know, and it is what it is. You can't get away from that, I don't think. You know, but next year, who knows if that's the case. You know, if they can put two really good years in a row, you never know. Maybe they get a little more respect from the committee at that point. But, yeah, I think that's kind of the recipe is, you know, as a mid-major, you've got to have continued success. And it can't just be a one and done.
Yeah, and I misspoke. JMU was a 13 last year. And 12 is the line where you get to the not have to play a true road game. You're right.
Abby Beeman, I think, was somebody that was on the All-Conference Award team. I think when we discussed that in a previous episode, we were all kind of scratching our head like, okay, yeah, she's good. She might be one of the better players on the best team on the women's side. With her getting the – it's no longer the MVP, the most outstanding player now, the MOP. Do you feel that that was kind of earned or that she kind of redeemed herself from people that kind of felt that way?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at throughout the course of the season, maybe her stat lines weren't the most impressive, but she did a lot. She makes a lot of hustle plays that aren't necessarily going to show up on the stat sheet. She's a scorer that, you know, leads the team in scoring for a reason, can spread the ball around. But I never thought that she did it at such an outstanding level that she should be raking in every single conference player of the week, you know, or you know, those weekly awards that the league gives out. Maybe she deserved it a couple times, but when you look at the overall body of work, what she meant to that Marshall team was, you know, was incredible. I mean, she was the heart and soul of that team. She played on that team a year ago, has a lot of experience, you know, with Marshall and kind of the leader of that system. And so I don't think it was a surprise to see her get player of the year. I do think that, she kind of wanted to go out there and prove herself even a little more in the tournament. And, you know, I thought it was huge that, they played the overtime of that championship game yesterday without her. And she showed even some versatility there about how she can lead from the bench. And so, you know, I think she's an incredible player. She did have a lot of success at the Division II level before she transferred to Marshall from Shepherd, and actually played against Kim Caldwell at the D2 level. And so I'm sure Kim's happy to have her on her side now, you know, hoisting up that trophy.
Shifting gears to the men's side, Marshall able to get a win, then get a loss to the eventual champion there of James Madison. Did that kind of go about as expected? And then when you look at the tournament as a whole, was there any team that really kind of surprised you, good or bad?
Yeah, I think that was exactly what people might have expected out of Marshall's men's side. Going into it, I thought that if there was a team that they could beat in the first round, it was Georgia State. They match up pretty well. They've had success against the Panthers before, and so I wasn't all too surprised to see them win. I was surprised that Kerfman shot as well as he had, as he did in that game, because he'd been in kind of a slump all year. This was, I think, statistically one of his worst in college from beyond the arc. But he sinks 9 3-pointers in that win against Georgia State. But James Madison's just a solid team all around, and Marshall just wasn't. There were a lot of inconsistencies this year. But as far as a team that surprises me, I got to say Texas State again. You know, they got the herd last year and as an 11 seed and beat the 3 seed Marshall in the quarterfinals, and, you know, get another big win in the quarterfinals this year. And I think, you know, Terrence Johnson just does a really good job of getting that club ready for postseason play. And maybe it shouldn't be a surprise. You know, they've had a lot of success in the Sun Belt tournament. And I think that was kind of a fun team to watch. But no other true surprises. I mean, App has shown, I guess, some signs of weakness all year. You know, Georgia Southern took them to overtime again. And so I wasn't all too surprised. I was really kind of hoping, just as a basketball fan in general, to see App and JMU in the championship game. And I think that would have been good for the league as a whole if those two had made it there. But, you know, it's fun to watch. But when you look at Arkansas State too, I think that was kind of the opposite trajectory of Marshall's season, because Marshall started off pretty well, won their first 4 league games, you know, got above 500, lost their last 7. In the regular season. Arkansas State got hot at the right time, and that's what you want to do. And so they were fun to watch in the tournament as well. But those two teams, you know, sometimes when you come in as underdogs, and I don't think Arkansas State was an underdog, you know, coming in as a 4 seed, you're kind of expected to compete. But I think those were fun to watch.
Man, I think TJ sandbags us during the regular season there at Texas State to get that kind of middle of the road or lower end of the middle seating so that he can kind of go on the run there. I agree with you. I was not surprised by Arkansas State's run. I was a little surprised that it wasn't an App State JMU final, though, and I do think that that would have been the best for the league. I think now that we've really reduced ourselves to a one-bid league yet again, you just really got to hope that App State has the resume and has done enough to get into at least the NIT. So you do still have that traditional 2 teams in the postseason, and then whatever happens on the C-level tournaments of people buying in to keep playing.
Yeah, and I think that the Sun Belt's best shot at 2 bids was those 2 being in the title game, because then you have the committee – whether it's the NIT or NCAA, looking at it, saying, okay, you know, they made it to their championship game. This is what they did in the regular season, especially when you're talking about a regular season champion like App State. It's just a tough landscape right now for teams in the Sun Belt to do it. It's hard to compete consistently year in and year out. I think, you know, the more consistency you get, in the top level teams, I think is when you start to build back to a two-bed league, because you have to, you almost have to have a top-heavy league to be able to warrant two bids as a mid-major, and that's just kind of the reality of it. And it's unfortunate for the Sun Belt, because I think that App State you know could have competed well you know in some of those matchups in the NCAA tournament, but James Madison's going to be dangerous. They're just a well-rounded team and fun to watch.
Spring ball is also in the air. What are we looking at for the Herd as they get ready to break camp and see what Charlie Huff can pull out of the Huff Shuffle this upcoming season?
The Huff Shuffle, I like it. I might have to relay that one to him. When I was looking at the schedule on my way home, I was like, man, that's less than 2 weeks away, spring ball to get started. So, man, you know, last year was a step backward, you know, for Marshall. They did some good things, but just were never consistent enough and really slid off towards the tail end of things. And, you know, and some of that was because of injury. Some of it, you know, maybe some of it had to do with play calling, putting guys in the right situations. And I just think there's a lot of excitement in the building about some fresh perspective. Obviously, you bring in a new offensive coordinator. They're completely changing up that offense. It's going to look more like an air raid style. Think Georgia Southern. You know, when you see that.
New Georgia Southern.
Yeah, new Georgia Southern. Who Marshall's offensive coordinator is now on staff there. Or Marshall's old offensive coordinator, sorry, Clint Trickett, on staff there with the Eagles. But, you know, I think it's just going to be a different-looking Marshall team. Defensively, they're probably still probably going to be in that same realm with Jason Seymour back as the DC. But offensively, it's going to be a lot of change. And they had to go out and get people to make that change. So pretty transfer-heavy. Obviously, you lose Rasheen Ali, replacing a couple pieces on the offensive line as well. But Logan Osborne, he's a guy that walked on senior day, was a junior in terms of eligibility, and he's coming back. So you got your center back, which is going to be big as far as continuity goes. But a lot kind of up in the air as far as who's starting at what positions. Obviously, quarterbacks at going to be a big discussion. They brought in two or three guys from the transfer portal. You know, it's certainly spring ball, I think, has snuck up on me a little bit. It seemed like just yesterday we were at signing day. That's kind of the nature of college sports, right? It just keeps going. And one season goes into the next. And, I'm looking forward to getting back out there and covering some gridiron ball, I think they start on the 25th of this month, so just a couple weeks away, and they'll start bumping pads together. I'm glad they don't start as early as some of these other schools, though. App State started extremely early this year. Georgia State, maybe they'll get through it this time when they start up a second time and not lose their coach.
You look at the schedule, it's very front heavy with those money games, the P5 games, however you want to look at it. I say that with Stony Brook being the opener this year. But is that something you kind of like, where you kind of get that out of the way and then you can just focus on Sun Belt Conference action after those first four games?
Yeah, I think that's just kind of how Marshall is used to doing it and how they've been able to do it in these first few years in the belt. Sometimes you see – early conference games sneak up there. I think Old Dominion and Louisiana maybe played week two or three last year. And so Marshall hadn't been in that situation yet, but I don't know if I like stacking the Power Five games as close together as they have. Look at last year, and you know, they played at NC State, played against Virginia Tech, in close proximity to one another, and came out of those games a little beat up. and that hurt him down the stretch because they had an early bye week and then played 10 consecutive weeks to close out the regular season. So they got a little bit of a break in that regard. There is a week between Ohio State and Virginia Tech, which are both road games this year. And then they actually have a second bye week later in the year after an early bye. I think that they're again in that week two or three bye, if you include week zero. So they're going to play two games, have an off week, go play Virginia Tech, and then, you know, play, you know, another four games, get an off week. And so I think that's probably a better way to stack a season. I know Huff wasn't happy about the way things fell as far as scheduling goes last year with that early bye and having to play 10 straight games to end the season because it doesn't give you a chance to heal up any, you know, until you end the regular season and start prepping for a bowl game if you can get there. And Marshall did, didn't play all too well in that bowl game in Frisco, Texas, but still got there. And I think there's something to be said for that, but certainly a little bit of a bitter taste. And the off season, the entire season just ended weirdly for Marshall in regards to, you know, some things that the coach had said, things that the AD had said, kind of gave that, you know, vote of confidence at the end of the regular season game. At the end of the last regular season game, and said that was a little bit weird. So it's been a weird off season, but the dust has settled a little bit, and I think they'll be ready to roll.
Over to baseball, a brand new, beautiful facility there, mm-hmm. but the Herd have not really fared well in non-conference action, sitting at 6-9 as we get ready to go into Sunbelt Conference action. Is there a late surge in the cards for the Herd, or is this just kind of a limp along season?
It's not what Marshall fans want to hear, but I think it's a limp along. You know, 6-9. They started 1-7 though, so they're you know, they're stringing together a couple. Opening weekend was really fun. They took that series over Manhattan. Took another series over Southeast Missouri State or Southeast Missouri, one of the two. You know, 1-2 out of 3 both of those weekends. But they just don't have as much talent as some of the other teams in the Sun Belt do right now. And part of that's because they haven't had a home field. When you don't have your own weight room, even when you don't have your own hitting facility, it's hard to recruit talent that's going to keep you competitive. And it's hard to, especially in this day and age of college sports as a whole, it's hard to retain that talent too. And so I think having a field helps that. That field went up quick. They built it in 15 months. And there were a lot of people who didn't think it was going to happen. But they made it happen. It's a beautiful ballpark. It didn't cut any corners. And of course, named after the legendary Jack Cook, who was a coach at Marshall you know, back in the 60s. And even then, he was promised a stadium. And unfortunately, he passed away a couple years before it was finally built. But it does bear his name, and that's kind of a cool story for Marshall to hang on to. You know, it's one of those things that's probably going to take a couple years. You know, they hired Greg Beals last year after Jeff Wagner was asked to resign, I think was the official. Anyway, he left after about 16 years at the program or with the program. And so you get some fresh perspective there, some new coaching staff, Tim Donnelly, who actually was a former assistant at Marshall several years ago. He comes back on the staff. But there's some excitement around that right now. And I think that the softball team too, with you know, a former player coming back to be coach, and the baseball stadium sits right behind the softball complex, and so they've really kind of built this you know, diamond sports area back there, which is kind of cool too. So lots of excitement, you know, and the wins will come as they get some more talent in. But lost again tonight, played WVU. Actually, they played that one in Charleston, where they have played conference series for the last few years. But yeah, so fun stadium. And the team, I think they'll come around. Just not there right now.
Luke, we thank you for your time. We know it's been a long week down on the beach, sipping pina coladas and watching basketball. Tell everybody where they can find more Luke and more about the Herd.
Yeah. Of course, our website, heralddispatch.com, or you can look me up on X, Twitter. I'm still getting used to calling it X.
Yeah, it's still weird.
Yeah, it's still weird. But anyway, that platform, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, just my name, at Luke Creasy, LukeCreasy. And that's where I'll be putting all my stuff. And look forward to having you along for the ride.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.